If you want to change the world, what's the best way? Change the government? Change yourself? What about business? Professor Jim Shaw from Vanderbilt University's Graduate School of Management believes business is the most important vehicle for social change. He's speaking at the Social Enterprise World Forum being held in Melbourne this week, and he joins me now. Welcome, Jim.
Good morning.
And also with me is Manuka Henare, Associate Dean in Māori Business Development at the University of Auckland Business School. Tēnā koe.
Kia ora.
Jim, I want to begin with you. Why is business the best vehicle for social change?
Well, if you think about the evolution of business in recent times over the past couple hundred years, since really the advent of capitalism, you know, what you see is that business has become the most powerful and prevalent institution on the planet today. You know, it is where the church and governments have been the most powerful institutions in their day. Today, really, business is the most powerful institution on the planet. If you look at the top 100 economies in the world, more than 50% of the top 100 economies in the world are companies, not countries. Walmart, as an economy, is larger than three-fourths of the world's countries. And as such, we believe that business can be the most powerful platform for social impact in the world today. You know,
well, one of the ways in which you've done that is with Net Impact, because this is an organization with tentacles and I think 200-odd MBO programs, and you were there at the beginning. Now, what does this do?
So Net Impact is an organization that educates and inspires and equips students, college students, as you mentioned, about a couple hundred universities now worldwide on five continents have chapters of Net Impact. And really the vision for the organization is to create a next generation of business leadership, both on the social entrepreneurial side of things as well as on the corporate side of things, that is educated about the social and environmental kind of issues in business and integrating them into their career paths.
Because those people who started perhaps the earliest ones in 93 and 94, they'll be mid-career now. I mean, their careers should be different as a result of joining this organization. Do you know what they're doing, what impact it is having?
Well, we know that we have about 25,000 business school students that have been a part of Net Impact during their school years, and about 15,000 of them continue to be members of the organization today. And we have no shortage of really amazing sort of success stories, both among the social entrepreneur set as well as in the, you know, people who lead corporate responsibility initiatives in major companies. Starbucks is one, for example, that are alumni of Net Impact and continue to be members of the organization today.
So they're focused on things like environmental protection, job creation.
Absolutely.
Right. I want to bring you in now, Manuka. In New Zealand, the Maori people are really very successful in business as owners. What are some of the examples?
Well, we have all this has occurred or come to light in the last 20, 25 years, but Maori are big players in four sectors, in the dairying industry. In fact, the Fonterra, New Zealand's biggest dairy company, which is also, I think, number in the top three dairy companies of the world, the single largest block of shareholders are Maori. Also in sheep, some of the largest sheep farms in New Zealand are all owned and managed by tribal entities, tribal groupings. Cultural tourism, Maori are dominant. The seafood sector, we own half of the seafood sector, and the aspiration is to own the lot. The new emerging sectors are geothermal. One of the great ironies of life from an indigenous point of view is that the leftover land that were given back to us after the stages of colonization, under that land happened to be all the geothermal areas. So we've ended up being the kind of owners of all the geothermal power. So the aspiration of a lot of the tribe now is to just totally control that. And why that's important is it's expected that geothermal power will generate 30 to 40% of New Zealand's future power needs. So those are the sectors that Māori are big players in.
Well, I mean, that really does make the Māori people in New Zealand the heavyweight owners of the economy. If you think about the three key areas that are, and it's a very export-focused economy because it's small. Yes. You know, we're talking about dairy and lamb and tourism. Yes. And you guys, well,
it is the New Zealand economy when you mention those. So, Interestingly enough, a large section of the New Zealand business community don't realise who the new owners of all these assets are. But they are learning quickly, and very, very quickly,
including
the banks and financial institutions and so on and so forth.
But now these assets seem to point, could point, to a brighter future.
Yes, indeed, and that's the great dream. Most of the tribal entities are now talking in their strategic planning, looking at 10, 15, 20, 30, 60 years now. I have a business plan here that's a 60-year one, and they're looking at two generations. And so they're looking at the grandchildren's grandchildren. And for a business school, we don't normally teach that sort of strategic thinking. And so this is quite an interesting challenge for us in terms of the content of our courses and our students. But that's another story. But getting our people ready to be managers and owners of, in fact, commercially interesting assets and capital is really, as I said earlier, our big challenge.
On Life Matters today, we're, as you may well be aware, the Social Enterprise World Forum is on in Melbourne this week, and I have with me two of the presenters at the forum, Manuka Henare, who's Associate Dean in Maori Business Development at the University of Auckland Business School, and also Professor Jim Shaw from Vanderbilt University's Owen Graduate School of Management. And Jim, I want to come back to you because you've already mentioned this. You've been involved with a company that makes products that I used to be addicted to, Ben and Jerry's. I was only able to break this addiction by moving back home to Australia, where until now they have not been available. What was it like working for that firm?
It was it was bad for my waistline, that's for sure.
I'm sure.
The organization that you reference is called Juma Ventures. The problem we were trying to solve was the problem of youth unemployment and youth violence in the Bay Area and San Francisco, where essentially teens from the wrong side of the tracks didn't have any constructive way to spend their time after school, and they get in trouble when they weren't working and doing something else. And so we started an employment program for these kind of high-risk teenage kids, and we became the first nonprofit in the U.S. to become a franchisee of a big company, and that company was Ben & Jerry's. And we developed a number of Ben & Jerry's ice cream shops in the San Francisco Bay Area and used those ice cream shops to provide entry-level employment for these kids, get them into their first job at 15 or 16, get them working through high school and onto a trajectory after high school, college or career that was more reflective of their capabilities. And it turned out to be, it took a while for it to become the success that it has become, but eventually we began to scale the organization. We started some different sorts of businesses that had a little more growth potential than ice cream shops did. The most prominent of which is a concession business, where we now do the concessions in all the sports stadiums in virtually the whole state of California now, where the kids work as vendors selling ice cream and coffee and peanuts and those sorts of things at the sports games. And from a social enterprise perspective, the revenues that those businesses generate constitute the vast majority of the budget for this nonprofit organization, Juma Ventures. So we do raise a little bit of money each year to provide supplementary services that, you know, would be the kinds of things that would be appropriate for teens after, you know, counseling, after school tutoring, that sort of thing. So the businesses don't generate enough to cover 100% of our expenses, but they generate the vast majority. And so from a sustainability standpoint, the nonprofit organization is far more self-reliant than most are. And that's really the sort of the idea of social enterprise.
Well, if I could come back to you, Manuka Henare, one of the things you do is advise Maori enterprises on their business development. But it is more complicated, isn't it, than it would be in the non-Maori world? Because as well as, I suppose, that the financial or economic bottom line, there are other measures which are very important in Maori culture.
Yes, and the consensus that emerges that we actually have four well-beings that's embedded into our tribal thinking. One is economic well-being. You've got to have a solid economy. You've got to do something with all the things you want to do in business and so on. Another well-being is the kinship well-being, social well-being, as some would say. In other words, at the end of the day, we hope our tribal system still exists and has been enhanced by the economic activity. A third one is the environmental well-being. We think highly and we speak every day to Mother Earth and Father Sky. And at the end of the of a year, have you improved the quality of life for Mother Earth and Father Sky, the environment, in other words? And the fourth one, though, is interesting, which is in all Māori business plans that I know of, they usually start off with spiritual statements in their mission and visions. And this is the area of spiritual well-being.
Mm.
And so I'm busy scouring the world to see who's doing something in the spiritual area. The Muslim world is helpful. The Buddhist world is helpful.
But I imagine
the new idea that's most helpful, I find, is the notion of spiritual capital, which comes out of the social capital, human capital debates or discussions, or say Becker and many other, and Putman and many others. Now that's very, very informative. And so now, when I say that, can you imagine doing an annual report like that? All the heads nod. Yeah, of course we can imagine that. Now, how the heck you do it? We're working on it.
That's quite a job. Monica Henare is Associate Dean in Māori Business Development at the University of Auckland Business School, and Professor Jim Shaw is from Vanderbilt University's Owen Graduate School of Management. Both of them are speakers at the Social Enterprise World Forum, which is on in Melbourne this week. What do you reckon about this idea about business and social change? Is it the most effective way to bring about real change? Give us a ring, 02-833-1430. That's the listener line. Leave a comment. Or hit the website, abc.net.au/rn/lifematters, and jump on the guest book or send us an email from there. Actually, while you're there, you might want to get your stories in first about the black sheep of the family, if you are a black sheep, or if someone in your family is a black sheep. Time now to dob in your brother or your sister or your uncle or whoever you like. This is Life Matters with me, Richard Addy, and you're on Radio National.